It's Here and Now, and if you've just joined us, we just spoke with Atticus Lish. His acclaimed new novel is Preparation for the Next Life. The heroine, Zole, is an undocumented Uyghur from China who waits on New York street corners for a van that will take her to a Motel 6, where she'll share a room with six other Chinese women and then work at Chinese take-up places during the day. Disdained by other Chinese workers from other regions, she can't understand their dialects or English. There are more than 40,000 Chinese restaurants across the country, nearly three times the number of McDonald's, including restaurants in tiny Pinedale, Wyoming, Old Forge, New York. There are three in Belle Vernon, Pennsylvania, which only has about 1,000 residents. It's a world that was profiled in a recent New Yorker article by Lauren Hilgers called The Kitchen Network, in which real workers, like the fictional Zole, travel from villages in China to these Chinese restaurants. We wanted to find out more, so we're joined by a professor who contributed to that New Yorker article, Peter Kwong, professor of immigration and Asian American studies at Hunter College. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
And can you give us some of the history of this? We're reading in The New Yorker about a young man who paid $70,000 to what he called a snakehead, somebody who would help him come to the United States. How long has that kind of emigration been going on?
The immigration of that type, illegal immigration coming from China, mainly since the late 1980s, that is after United States and China normalized relationship, and working class poor people coming from mainly at that point coming from Fujian province. And so we noticed them since 1988 onward.
Well, and we're reading that in some cases this immigration was so sudden that entire villages in Fujian would just empty out overnight.
That's right. So what happened is that first people coming in and found possibilities in employment, particularly in New York region, because they are a large labor market, and they start helping their relatives coming in. And pretty soon the words get around, you could make a lot of money. And all the male, mostly male, began to leave the village. As a result, you have many, many villages, literally, that we've seen, just empty out all its mail.
Although they might empty out of residents, but they started then perversely a few years later to fill up with huge McMansions. We understand some of them empty because these workers, and we'll talk about the work that they were doing, but these workers started to send money back.
That's right. So in Chinese family structure is that everybody who, even if you leave, you're part of the family. So therefore, they still see themselves having a home. And then when they make money, they want to show off, make their relatives at home feel better. They will give money and build mansions, even though they have never had the opportunity to go back for most of them.
The New Yorker reporter Lauren Hilgers goes to a village in Fujian province, and she sees all these empty McMansions, and someone says to her, oh, that's okay. Even if it's boarded up, it's okay because someone will look at that and say that person's doing really well in the United States.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's why also pushes everybody out. The mansions is a way to show that they're doing fine and you should join them.
Well, but let's talk about how they are doing. This, you know, so-called kitchen network in the U.S. Mm-hmm. that these immigrants, after having paid this extraordinary amount of money and being picked up and ferried from China through sometimes other Asian countries, then to Mexico, where they're smuggled across the Rio Grande, and many end up in New York, where they go to these employment agencies who then ferry them out again. Where do they go?
Initially, in the 80s, they're not that many Chinese restaurants. But as these illegals coming in larger and larger number, restaurants began to appear in the suburbs and then farther and farther away. By now, almost every town across the country, they're either takeout or Chinese restaurant or buffet. Mm-hmm. So that's the pattern of growth fueled by the number of people continue to come in looking for jobs, and the availability of jobs created by the fact that many early immigrants, they make enough money and started to open up their own restaurants.
Well, and so what do these workers do? Atticus Lish writes about a young woman who's, you know, again, put on a van and driven sometimes out of New York. She might work for a month outside of New York City. She doesn't speak the language, so when she runs into any kind of trouble, including, you know, violence potentially, she feels she can't go for help. Describe the life that these workers have.
Normally, they will be living in a dorm situation, often supplied by the employers. And they will be living in usually in a very, very isolated neighborhoods. And since they don't speak English and they hardly venture out of their environment. And what they usually make are very, very low wages, although living and food situation is taken care of. So they do save as much as they can.
Well, they make very little, maybe 1,000, 2,000 tops a month. Something like that. But isn't that extraordinary compared to people in China who might make $4,000 a year?
Exactly. So therefore, that income contrast make them think that the United States is a much better place. After all, you could save $70,000 to pay off your debts in about 3 or 4 years. That's a lot of money.
Well, but Professor, someone like you, a scholar, and
yes,
other Chinese looking at this, your thoughts on this system. Is it abusive, as it seems to be in Atticus Lish's book, where this young Uyghur woman is abused by the other Chinese who come from different regions who look down on her as a Uyghur? In the New Yorker article, we read about workers who say, you do this job too long, you'll lose your mind. You don't have your family there. You're isolated. You don't meet other people. You might go to 20 different restaurants in different states in 1 month, traveling around on buses. You have no real place to live. Is this the typical immigrant story where this is going to be worth it for this generation because they say they're just doing it to make life better for the children they might have? Or is this a trap? Are they trapped here?
The problem here is that's how America is built. You constantly try to take advantage of new immigrants willing to work with a lot of reasons to work hard. So these people are working numb. They are just they don't have time to have any kind of enjoyment.
Working numb? Did you say numb?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To the point that, it is true that it's very bleak. The trade-off, of course, is that the hope that they will save enough money, pay off their debts, and even more, they could start on their own restaurants. Or, enough money to have children that they will be able to go to college. So that's a typical American immigrant story. Nevertheless, it is very harsh, very exploitative, and potentially abusive. And so the kind of story that in the novel is quite, it's quite true. So there have been many pushbacks, although usually in larger cities, in New York City, for instance, many labor strike against these kind of practices. But when you're in a suburb or in far away in countryside, that fighting back is not easy. That's why a lot of them ending up quitting, because they can't stand the abusive situation. They decide they're going to go back to New York and go back to employment agents, get a better job. And usually it's not that much better.
Well, having read Atticus Lish's terrific new book, Preparation for the Next Life, and speaking to you, one thing is true, Professor. You will never look at the person who hands you your takeout the same way again. That's Peter Kwong, Professor of Immigration and Asian American Studies at Hunter College in New York. Professor, thank you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Here Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.